And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Medow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is one way for you to interact with us here on the program. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter as well. The teams will start resuming practice today in preparation for the second preseason game, which will come your way Monday night against the Cleveland Browns. So we'll get into some things to watch out for in practice today. The players met with the media on Wednesday. We touched on Brandon Marshall, some of the observations that he had to say about building chemistry with Eli Manning and the rest of the receiving corps. Damon Snacks Harrison also spoke, so we'll get into some of that. And some of the new power rankings were released from various outlets that has been showcased on Giants.com. So we'll cover a lot. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. Paul, let's start with Damon Snacks Harrison. And we talked about Brandon Marshall, as I mentioned yesterday, but Snacks also spoke to the media. And I think one of the highlights of his commentary was the fact that he talked a lot about Jay Bromley. And we were talking all offseason about who's going to replace Jonathan Hankins. Robert Thomas's name had come up a lot because I think Spag spoke extremely highly of him. He was very impressive in the offseason program. Dalvin Tomlinson's name emerged clearly because he was the second-round pick. But I feel as if the forgotten player in all of this was Jay Bromley. Not that we didn't realize he was on the roster, but, you know, he quietly got snaps here or there over the last few seasons, but never really had an opportunity to perhaps move ahead on the depth chart. And now all of a sudden, I think he's very relevant to the conversation.
At the moment, he is. And here's the thing about Jay. Two seasons ago in 2015, it looked like the arrow was pointing up on him. And, you know, he had had some production. There was reason to think that he was going to get better. I remember telling you folks on BBKL that both he and Kerry Wynn spent virtually every day of the offseason going into 2016 working their brains out. I mean, oh, man, you could not imagine the kind of preparation that Jay Bromley and Kerry Wynn did for last season. And the production did not equate. That happens sometimes, okay? That's why the Giants are hopeful and optimistic that the work that Hart and Flowers have put in will produce results, but you can't say for sure. There's never a guarantee that the preparation will come through the equation on the other side with production. In any event, so Bromley and Kerry Wynn both had quiet seasons last year. Both had put themselves in what I consider to be show-me seasons this year. Because if they can't come out and show that they belong on the 53, you have to start wondering if they deserve a spot on the roster. Now, both of these guys have a terrific work ethic. Both guys are smart. Obviously, Wynn is versatile. Wynn plays special teams. You know, and they're good guys. They're really good guys, terrific teammates and locker room guys. So they have all of the other things going for them. But ultimately, this is a production-based business. And you have to look at what happens on the field when there are live snaps. And Jay Bromley and Kerry Wynn last year had quiet seasons. There's no other way to slice that. They had quiet seasons. Both guys, it just so happens that both guys were extremely productive in their limited snaps the other night against Pittsburgh in the preseason loss.
Two standouts.
Two of the handful of standouts
that
Coach McAdoo went
particular.
Out of his way to talk about. So you have to believe that they have injected themselves back to the forefront of competition on the depth chart. Now, they've got three more preseason games to go. I remember Sonoris Moss would always re-inject himself into the depth chart during the preseason. Ramses Barden was another guy, you know. And then the regular season would come, and the production never showed up like you wanted it to or like you expected it to. Nobody knows for sure if Jay Bromley and Kerry Wynn are going to have productive NFL seasons in 2017. Nobody knows that for sure. But you have to make a decision based on what you see over the next 3 weeks, whether or not those guys will have the opportunity to do so in a Giants uniform. And I think you're absolutely right, Lance. They are now reinserting themselves into the equation, and we're going to have to watch every snap closely. And Robert Thomas has not helped himself by not being on the field because of soreness for the past week.
but he did return to practice this week, so that's encouraging that he'll probably be out on the field against the Cleveland Browns. And you're right, because somebody who I thought was a front runner, now all of a sudden the
we all did.
Deck of cards has been reshuffled, essentially, so now he has to fight his way back up and try to beat out Jay Bromley, who I think it took full advantage of his reps, as we mentioned, in the preseason game against the Steelers. I want to read a quote or two. This is what Snacks had to say about Jay Bromley's progress, considering he's with him on a daily basis. He said, quote, "Jay's come a long way, but that's just a testament to him being in here in the offseason. I come in here to run. He's already running. He's lifting weights. He's focused. It's night and day from where he was a year ago," end quote. Then Snacks goes on to say the following in terms of, this was a question where he involved Eric Flowers and Jay Bromley in his answer. He said, quote, "He was working from, I want to say maybe a week and a half after the season. He was in here grinding it out, just trying to improve. And when you see somebody, they're willing to get better. Obviously, it has to translate out there on the field, as you mentioned. But as long as the want to is there, I think he'll be fine," end quote. And he was sort of summarizing his thoughts on Bromley and Flowers, that the desire, the want to get better was apparent all offseason, at least.
And that's where it's got to start. Because if a player does not approach the offseason with the intention of doing everything possible to get better, well, chances are he's probably never going to reach his potential. So these guys that we're talking about, you know, the Bromleys, the Wins, the Flowerses, and the Hearts, if you will, they've all taken the first step during the course of the offseason to do what they have to do, to build the foundation to improve. Now it's up to them to take the next step and get the production that equates to their preparation. That's all there is to it.
Now, Bromley's been here since 2014. This is a critical year because this is the final year of his rookie contract. He played in 8 games in 14. He played all 16 games in 15, which is by far, I think, one of his most productive seasons. He actually wound up starting 4 games, and then last year he played in 15 games, no starts. He did record his first career sack. So, I mean, if there's any year to make a statement, regardless of whether you start or not, Paul, I would say this is the year. Similar to Devon Kennard. I think he and Devon Kennard are in very similar positions because as they get to the end of their rookie contracts, not only do you want to display that you're good enough to maybe go elsewhere if they don't want to bring you back, but also give the Giants a reason to bring you back and keep you within the mix of this defense.
Well, the good news for Devon Kennard is that they did find out the best way to use him last season. They want him coming forward. They want him pushing the pocket. They want him attacking on running plays. He's supposed to go vertical against that line of scrimmage. And they have figured out that he basically is best utilized, much like Spag utilized Kavika Mitchell back in the 2007 season. Now, Kavika, of course, was a weak side linebacker in those days, and Kennard is a strong side linebacker. So I understand that. But the point is, going forward, that's the best way to utilize Devon Kennard's talents. And, you know, he hasn't made nearly as many big plays as Mitchell did in that 2007 season when the Giants won the Super Bowl. I still think Kavika Mitchell was the most underrated, overlooked player on that Super Bowl championship team. I still believe that, and I'll never stop believing it. Antonio Pierce agrees with me. I think that's good enough evidence right there.
Solidifies your position.
But Devon Kennard at least has put together some nice chunks of production that give him more credibility. You know, these other guys we're talking about, it's still an unknown. It's still a hope. It's still optimism. It's still, we think, maybe, not sure. Is it going to be there? Got to see.
Well, with Kerry Wynn, though, because he's been a part of this conversation too, Paul, you know, he's the type of player, and I agree with you, relatively quiet last season, but I feel, and we're all guilty of this, when we look at defensive linemen in the National Football League, the first stat that always jumps out is sacks. You know, you're always looking, okay, how many sacks did this player record? Which is not necessarily the one statistic that you should go by to truly evaluate a player. Quarterback hits, I think, is also very important.
Pressures.
But a guy like Kerry Wynn, who's also very effective against the run, how do you quantify a player that is very effective against the run outside of maybe looking at his tackle total, which to me doesn't necessarily truly tell the whole story?
Well, you know, again, I look at things a lot differently than most people because I break down the film and I do a coach's analysis.
Well, but I'm talking about more of the general public and how they look at things.
It's nearly impossible for them to do it. It really is. I will tell you many, many years ago, Denny Marson, who was a and by the way, I know he's ill right now, and God bless him and all the strength in the world to you, Denny. Great guy. Was Giants defensive line coach for many years. Big fan, a big favorite of Michael Strahan's. Great, great guy. Worked with the Jets after he was with the Giants for a while. And again, we wish him all the health and whatever he could do to recover from what he's going through. Denny taught me how coaches break down defensive line and offensive linemen. And what you do is, when you go back and you're watching the tape and you're rewinding it, see, I'm giving away secrets here. I should be doing
this.
That's
why I'm asking you these questions, so you do reveal
and,
the secrets.
And what you do is, on every play, you assign a positive, a neutral, or a negative to every single snap for that player. Now, a positive is a play where he clearly beat his guy. A negative is if he was clearly beaten. A neutral is if the play went to the other side of the field and he truly had no impact in the play whatsoever. If there's a sweep around to the left sideline and the left defensive end on the defense is on the opposite side of the field and, you know, he's tussling with his guy, but there's really no impact on the play whatsoever.
Changes.
That's a neutral. And so by the end of the game, you have to look.
And that's positives, how you grade the players.
That's how you grade the players.
Yeah.
Positives, negatives, neutrals. Okay? That's what I do, folks. All right? That's why I'm up till 4 in the morning. You know, how many nights at a time.
Yes.
And, you know, to do that, though, you also have to understand a lot about the game. You can't just say, oh, it looks like he won that, and give him a plus. No, maybe he didn't. You know, you have to know. That's where the experience comes in. So, what I would say is, you know, for just Joe Fan watching it on TV, and that's the other problem too, you know, I'm looking at cut-ups. I'm not looking at the TV picture. And that's also another thing too. That's why it's hard, fans. I appreciate what you're going through. That's why I try to break this down for you as best as possible, because I'm trying to give you the most detailed information, peeling back the layers of the onion, like I like to call it. Because the TV tape doesn't really tell you a lot about what you need to know. So, in short, my answer is there's not a whole lot you can do to really find out the value of a Kerry win if you're just watching it on TV at home. To truly find out his value, there's a lot of detail and a lot of work and a lot of experience and a knowledgeable eye that goes into that.
And that's why I think that's important to at least bring to the forefront here, as opposed to just getting caught up in looking at the box score of every single game. Sometimes players have an impact, and it doesn't necessarily show up in the box score. I say that about any sport. Same thing with basketball, too. There's little subtle things that a player does that sometimes you can't quantify that.
I will give you a great example. There was a game earlier last season, and it was at the point when JPP had not had a lot of sacks yet. And I know that the fan base, the message boards, certainly a lot of the writers were all over JPP for not having more sacks and not being very effective. Well, when I graded the film out and I looked at the fourth quarter of a game, it was one of the games the Giants held on and wound up winning. Eli had brought them back and then the defense held on at the very end. And I believe what I counted was that JPP had made an impact on 9 out of 12 snaps in that quarter. He did not have a sack, okay? I think he may have only had 2 tackles and maybe got his hand on a ball. But on 9 of the 12 plays, he had plus plays and clearly impacted the plays. And I remember talking to Olivier Vernon later on in the week. And I was laughing with him. I said, I don't understand why everybody is saying that Jason's not having an impact on the game. And he turned, he laughed. He goes, man, he goes, I don't know what they're saying. I said, I know. I said, let me just tell you what I saw. And I explained to him. And I said, this play, this play, this play, 9 out of 12 plays, whatever it was. He goes, you're right, man. He goes, you're absolutely right. He was dominant, dominant in the fourth quarter. But because it wasn't obvious, nobody recognized it.
Yeah.
And nobody wrote about it. And nobody talked about it on the message boards. But he was dominant. He was the most impactful player on the defense in that fourth quarter and the biggest reason defensively they won that game. But you wouldn't have known that by reading the newspapers or listening to the message boards. So, you know, this is the peeling back of the onion that we're talking about. And that's why it's so difficult. And this offensive line thing, which has been such a hot button topic, and everybody wants to, you know, have their own Eric Flowers voodoo doll. And I understand that. Okay? I really do understand that. But it's the knowledge and the experience and the understanding of peeling back the onion and watching specifically what he is and is not doing and understanding it. That's when you can really judge his progress. He has made progress. There is absolutely no question about that. Must he get better? No question he must get better. But the slamming that's been going on and the sticking of the pins in the voodoo doll are so much hype, so unjustified. If he had not gotten any better at all, if he had digressed or regressed from what he had shown last year, then I would tell you, you can get out your voodoo dolls, and you can get out your box of pins, and you could stick away. But that's not what's happened. And it's funny, because when we try to explain that to people and educate them and give them the knowledge about what's going on, a lot of people resist, and they don't want to hear it. They rather stick pins in the doll.
Well, I also think it's important to at least see a regular season game or two before everybody jumps to conclusions.
No question.
That doesn't mean that practice is not important. That doesn't mean that preseason games are not important. But you're really not going to know truly how far along this offensive line has come until we see a number of games where they're on the field together, they're going up against number one defenses, and they're doing it for more than maybe one or two series. So, I mean, that's the key here before we jump to conclusions. I wanted to add, though, one other thing to what you were talking about, you know, it's hard to evaluate players and JPP having an impact on plays but not showing up in the box score. I think you can say the same thing about wide receivers, Paul. You know, when a wide receiver runs up the field and blocks to help a running play, you don't credit a statistic for that wide receiver.
I do.
Well, you do, but I'm saying there's nothing in the box score that shows that that wide receiver assisted on two of these runs.
The box score does not show that.
That's what I'm getting at. Another great example would be, I go back to the Super Bowl between the Patriots and the Seahawks, Malcolm Butler's interception. He gets credit. Brandon Browner, though, was the one that truly helped open up that play in terms of the cross that the Seahawks are trying to run. So that's another example of Brandon Browner in the history books is not going to get credited with any number.
You're
but
right.
If you watch the play, if you studied the play, you understand that he had just as big of a role as Malcolm Butler did, even though Malcolm Butler gets credit with the interception.
And the other guy who had as big of a role in that play was Russell Wilson, who never should have thrown the ball.
Well, yes.
Because if he had had the intelligence like he should have had, he should have been able to see what was going on there, and he never should have thrown the ball. Or he should have put it into the third row. That's right. Russell Wilson is a system quarterback, and I'm sorry. I think he's in the perfect system, and that's why he wins. Half the teams in this league would not want Russell Wilson as their starter. I'm just telling you.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far. I agree.
I am going that far.
Well, you are. I don't know necessarily if I would go that far. I do agree, though. I think there are certain quarterbacks that are effective because of the scheme that they run. I think that's very fair. And that if you move them elsewhere, there's no guarantee they'd have similar success. I don't, though, necessarily view Russell Wilson as a system quarterback only. I think he does have intangibles that would allow him to be effective under other schemes.
Well, let's just put it this way. A smarter quarterback who has a better, well-rounded perspective on the game would not have thrown that pass. Because you could see what the Patriots were doing to stop that pick play a mile away. And in fact, they had already made the defensive back moves by the time he threw the ball. He should have been able to see that, and he should have thrown the ball away.
Well, at the same time, though, in fairness, one play doesn't define a quarterback's career.
No, it
does not.
Even
though it's a big play, I wouldn't necessarily downgrade it. Listen, it's the same thing that we're trying to say with respect to Eric Flowers. You don't judge Eric Flowers based on five or six reps in practice.
That's true.
You got to wait and see what happens over the course of the game.
But you brought up the unsung hero in that play, and I'm telling you, the unsung villain in that play.
Well, to balance it out. You know,
Pete Carroll takes too much heat for that play. Russell Wilson should have either had the guts to throw the ball away or should have had the guts to get out of the play.
But I think that if you want to go the route of blame, that's fine, and a lot of people to this day do. I also like to go the route of giving the Patriots a hell of a lot of credit.
Absolutely.
Because we talked about this on previous programs. During the week,
they
were studying that
play. They had prepped for it.
So that says a lot about the coaching staff and the players knowing,
absolutely,
hey, there's a chance we may see this, and then the players identifying it correctly, mm-hmm, before the play, reading it correctly, and then effectively having it translate to a game-winning,
exactly,
Super Bowl winning Super Bowl.
I agree with that.
So that's pretty big as well. All right, let's head to the phone lines. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Twitter as well, at Lance Meadow. One word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. He is at Giants, W-F-A-N. If you want to interact with the two of us individually, you can do that as well. Hashtag Giants Chat. Let's open up the lines. Bobby is in D.C. Bobby, what's happening?
Oh, hey, guys. How you doing? You know, this is my lucky day. It's my lucky day.
How you doing?
Okay. How we doing, D?
Lance,
how we doing, Bobby?
Lance, they think, I'm sorry. I called yesterday, and Lance, you threw something at me. It rattled my brain. I'm trying to figure out why, what happened. And if you recall, you mentioned a stat to me about Melvin Gordon.
Correct.
If you recall.
Yeah,
you
I do remember
that.
You
mentioned that Melvin Gordon had about 190 carries with zero touchdowns.
His rookie year.
And I thought to myself, they got to have a reason for that. And I looked at the stats, and I figured out what it was. Out of those 190 carries he had, only 14 was inside the red zone, 11 from the 20, 4 from the 10, and 1 from the 5. So what they would do, for some reason, they would take him out the game, and Woodhead would carry the ball or be in the backfield at 20, but out of those 190 carries he had. So only really 14 was in the red zone. 15 was in the red zone.
Well, in fairness, though, how many carries, I don't know off the top of my head, how many carries did Paul Perkins have in the red zone from those five games that he had double-digit carries last season? If this is the point that you're trying to make.
He had 9 from the 20, 4 from the 10, and none from the 5.
Okay, so that's a limited sample size, in fairness, with Paul Perkins.
Well, now, wait a second. Seriously.
I mean, that's limiting.
We're going to use your numbers against you, because if a quality running back is supposed to get at least 4 yards a carry and Perkins did not have any carries inside the five-yard line,
I mean, what?
Then guess what? You just proved your own point.
That's what I'm saying.
There's not enough evidence.
And that was my point yesterday, Bobby. My point was it's a limited sample size. At five games, double-digit carries, and then what you further threw out within the red zone, none in the five. I mean, once again, I think we're rushing to judgment with somebody.
Well, no, believe me, guys, I'm hoping I'm wrong. I want to stick my foot in my mouth so deep that he has a 1,000-yard season with 10 touchdowns. I want him to do so well if he starts. But the mediocrity with the Giants and these running backs are killing me. Do you know Shane Vereen, out of 6 years in the league, he has 1,200 yards? Like 1,200
well,
and
but go back. But hold on, Bobby.
Career.
Go back to how he was utilized in New England. He was the third down back. I mean, you got to put things in perspective. They had LeGarrette Blount. They had plenty of other guys that Vereen was not going to move ahead to be the workhorse. I mean, that's why I'm saying, Bobby, that you can't just look at a box score and you can't look at numbers. You have to understand the usage of the player. And Vereen, I think there's a perfect explanation. Go back to the Super Bowl. We were just talking about it. Shane Vereen set a record for the most catches by a running back.
Until James White passed him.
So that just goes to show you how Shane Vereen was utilized by the New England Patriots.
Bobby,
he was much more of a receiving
player. Look, if you want to go strictly with touchdown runs and your red zone stats and all the stuff that you want to use to make your point, then you're probably going to be in love with Wayne Gallman, who ran for 17 touchdowns as in Clemson last year and got drafted because he had a nose for the end zone. So here's the good news. If Paul Perkins can't get it done, maybe Wayne Gallman can. How about that?
Well, that'll be excellent. Excellent.
Okay.
One more point, fellas. One more point.
Sure.
We need Eli a lot. We need him so bad right now because the two backs we have in this system, they're not ready. They're not ready. Josh Johnson, he was so scared during that preseason game. He ran into two sacks. I mean, he's just not ready. I'm sorry. He's 7 years in the league. He played like he's a rookie. Geno Smith come in the game and make him look bad. I'm like, wait a minute here. I would never say this. I know Thornton would say it, but if Geno Smith were to start, we may have scored a touchdown. You know, that's how crazy looking at Josh Johnson I was feeling watching Geno Smith move the ball.
Neither one of these guys are Jeff Rutledge or Jeff Hostetler. Let's just leave it at that, okay?
Okay.
All right.
We need to look at another quarterback, though. These guys are not going to fit the bill. Eli goes down. I'm sorry. I was hoping I would see something out of one of those guys, but if something happened to Eli, our whole season is crushed.
Well, keep in mind, Bobby, I mean, it is one game. I think what they're going to do, and we talked about this, Geno's probably going to get an opportunity to get in the game before Josh Johnson so that they keep this competition as even as possible.
We think so.
Now, that doesn't mean that Geno's starting the next game. We're going to see Eli, I think, in the next two games. But the point is, Geno may get in the game before Josh, and then you'll get to see perhaps how he does playing a little bit earlier in the game, playing with some different personnel, and I think that may give us just a better idea of how these quarterbacks can perform.
But, Bobby, you're on board. You're on board with everybody else. Nobody wants to see Eli miss any snaps. Trust me on that one.
I mean, let's face it, Bobby. In fairness, I don't think any team wants to see their starter go down and feels great about their backup coming in and all of a sudden things being even. I mean, I was doing on another program, and, Bobby, we appreciate the phone call, and I think this is relevant.
Thank you.
You got it.
Thank you.
I was going through every backup quarterback in the National Football League, Paul. And I went through –
not a pretty picture.
No, it's not a pretty picture. But I went through, I thought, teams that were in a good position – that God forbid they lost their starter, that you would feel content with what they're throwing out there. And I had a top five that I put together.
Okay,
and
who are your top five?
Two honorable
right
mentions.
Well,
I got my chart here. I want to make sure that I don't get it wrong. And then you'll see, not that I'm trying to sell it. You see, I got everybody and I got it bold.
Okay.
All right, so that my top five,
who'd
not in any order. Carolina has Derek Anderson to back up Cam. Remember, Derek Anderson was the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns the last time they made the playoffs. People forget about that.
Okay.
I put Matt Moore of the Dolphins in there. And listen, if they didn't get Jay Cutler, I would have been content with Matt Moore being the starting quarterback for Miami. Jimmy Garoppolo of the Patriots.
Yep.
A.J. McCarron of the Bengals.
We think so.
Well, let's see. Got in a playoff game. And, you know, handled himself once again.
Again, small sample size.
Small sample size. Well, listen, Jimmy Garoppolo's got a small sample size, too.
He does.
And I'm not trying to crown these guys. I'm just saying I feel as if they could come in, they could run the offense, they'd be okay. And then my fifth one is Matt Cassel in Tennessee.
If he's got anything left. He's been around a long time.
My two honorable mentions, Nick Foles, who's back in Philly. He's backing up Carson Wentz.
I guess,
and Matt Schaub is backing up Matt Ryan with the Falcons. So those are my top five and then my two honorable mentions.
Yeah.
And once again, that's seven quarterbacks that I threw out there out of 32 backup situations. And you don't even have to feel very confident about all seven. That's not what I'm trying to do.
That's not a very appetizing list.
Well, and that I wasn't trying to sell it as it's great. My
I'd
point
still rather
was,
have Jeff Rutledge.
Well, or Jeff Hostetler too. Because Hostetler could be my wide receiver too, which
there
is nice.
There you go.
So I'm getting back to the point that Bobby was throwing out there, and I'm even relating this to some conversations that you have and I have had on prior programs where people call up and we were talking about the backup left tackle position. And what. So if this is what the backup quarterback situation is like in the NFL, what do you think then the backup left tackle spots look like across the NFL landscape?
You don't want to know.
Once again, it's all about – yeah, you don't want to know. It's all about putting things in perspective where you can't look at the Giants in a bubble. You have to look at the Giants, yes, for the personnel they have, but at the same time, you have to look at, okay, well, how did the Giants stack up, Paul, against the rest of the NFL landscape?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you start to do lists and you look at other personnel, then you realize, you know what? I don't think that the Giants situation in certain backup spots is that drastically different than what the rest of the league has to offer. And that was why I went back and I looked over all of these backup quarterbacks, because I hear the same things about Josh Johnson, Geno Smith, if God forbid Eli goes down. And then I'm saying to myself, have you looked across the NFL landscape? I mean, do you think that if you looked across – here we go, the Lions,
You didn't name Sanchez. I'm interested to hear why you didn't name Sanchez.
Well, Mark Sanchez I think is solid backup, but I think that there's guys with more upside that I named.
Yeah, Sanchez doesn't have upside, but he can manage a game.
He can.
He can get you through
if
you don't ask him to do too much.
I mean, I could have put together three or four honorable mentions. Sanchez would have been within that honorable mention group.
I'm just looking through them now.
But let me give you well, you don't even have to – look at my list. I mean, I put them all the names.
Yeah,
you're hurting yourself.
Up.
There's no need to hurt yourself here. Look at – if Matthew Stafford goes down, this is my point.
Yes.
Okay? Because
yes.
I don't think everybody's looking at the Lions quarterback depth chart. We'll get to more of your folk callers here in a second. Matthew Stafford goes down. Do you even – can you randomly take a guess about who the Lions backup situation is like or third stringer? Because they've had some notable veterans, but those days are gone.
Orlovsky is already gone.
Yes, Orlovsky is not there anymore. Yes. And Drew Stanton is not there either.
No. And when Orlovsky came out of UConn, actually, he had a pretty good arm.
Yeah. Well, listen, Orlovsky is a guy that's been around the block. If you had him as a backup, that's fine. He's suitable.
It still bothers me that Christian Ponder's on the street, to be honest with you.
They get an opportunity if somebody gets hurt.
I think he should be one of the better backups in this league right now. I'm surprised he's on the street.
Well, let's stay on topic here.
It's Detroit. It's not.
I have a feeling you will not get these, and it's no disrespect.
It's not
to you.
Landry or Munson,
no.
Or Hipple.
No.
No.
No. It's not that. All right. So here it is.
No. These How about are, George Plimpton?
No, not George Plimpton. The two quarterbacks behind Matthew Stafford.
You young folks have no idea what
following.
I'm talking
no,
about.
No, they didn't. I think that went right over their head.
Yeah. Absolutely.
No,
did.
Lennon Maryland probably knows who you're talking about. That's about it. That's where the list ends. Or maybe Vic in Florida, too. Okay. Jake Rudock.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. And then Brad Kaya, who they just drafted out of Miami.
Yes.
Who is a decent prospect, but once again, he has not played any NFL snaps. Those are the two guys backing up Matthew Stafford.
Kaya was barely draftable on a lot of boards.
So the next
That's
time,
weak.
My point is, the next time that we're going to sit here and have concerns over Josh Johnson and Geno Smith, once again, look at the Detroit Lions quarterback depth chart right now.
That's
Matthew
not
Stafford
good.
Goes down.
That's not good.
I mean, once again, you got to take a look at the NFL landscape, and I think
okay.
that says a lot. All right, let's head back to the phone lines, and we check it with Dan in the Poconos. Dan, what's happening? How are we
yes,
doing, Dan?
Sir.
Hello.
Hey, it's a pleasure to talk to you, fellas. Love your show.
Appreciate
Listen
that.
Every
Thank
day.
You.
I just wanted to mention, Paul, I'm glad you made it in today. I think after the last couple of days, you know, I'm getting a little worried about you. You can't get too excited, you know? These people, some people are giving you a bit of a hard time.
Hey, you know what? It's okay. It is what it is. I deal with this stuff whether I'm here in the studio or whether I'm out on the street talking to people at the mall or at the deli or at the post office. Everybody wants to talk about certain things, especially the voodoo dolls they have in their closet. So I'm used to it by now.
Yeah, I can imagine watching you. I guess you got to keep it a little bit under check when you're actually watching the game because you're working probably on the sidelines where if you were in your living room, you'd probably be like me. Screaming, running around, you know, you can't sit
to be
still
honest,
because you're so excited.
It's not about that. It's about, you know, I'm trying to do as much detailed study of the game as I'm actually watching it, because then when I go back, I'm making notes as the plays are happening as to certain
right.
plays I definitely want to look at like four times when I'm looking at the tapes and the cut-ups. So
oh my God.
I need Excedrin after the game is over. Trust me.
Yeah, maybe a little something stronger, too. But anyway, I'll leave it at that. I wanted to mention, too, like yesterday, I mean, even Len lost his mind momentarily there. And then Charlie came up and gave you that short little scenario and got off the air. And I kind of think you let the cat out of the bag now, because everyone was always thinking, like, what would we do? What would we do if, you know, if Flowers, even if he got hurt, you know, if he went down.
Right.
And, you know, we wanted to stay away for years now. You want to stay away from making those changes. But when you mentioned all those changes, a couple of double switches, I'm like, you know how impatient the fans are. So are they going to accuse? Because when you said it, it kind of like made it more real to me at least. So I'm thinking like, you know, if God forbid, you know, I'm hoping they can at least hold their own. I'm not looking for, you know, five Pro Bowlers. But, you know, after the first game against Dallas, if things start going looking a little bad, you know, everyone's going to be, you know, how impatient everyone is. They're going to be going crazy and calling for all those changes that you mentioned.
Hey,
well, but
you're kidding yourself. Most people aren't even waiting for Dallas. They're already sticking
yeah,
the pins in the voodoo
They're already doing
doll.
That. But
come on
but,
now. They're not even waiting that long.
I mean, the one thing you got to understand, Dan, is the court of public opinion doesn't dictate personnel moves with the New York Giants. So that
exactly.
at least is somewhat
Thank
of a positive.
For that.
The other thing I will add is, and I'm going to perhaps continue to let some more kid out of the bag, to use your terminology, Dan, but over the point that Paul and I were talking about at the end of the show yesterday, you know, Justin Pugh, let's not forget this, he's been on the record multiple times that since they solidified and they put him at left guard, he feels he's been that much more comfortable on the offensive line. So, you know, that to me is a point of last resort to start to
right.
monkey with the O-line and move him out to left tackle, because he said that now that they primarily look at him as a guard, he knows he can concentrate, he knows who he's playing next to him, and he knows that's where he could be focused on. Whereas in previous years, he was sort of that jack-of-all-trades type of offensive
yeah.
lineman where he had to be concerned about getting in reps, getting in mental notes at tackle and guard. I think over the last two seasons, he's been primarily focused on guard, and I think that's helped his development as well. So I don't know if they're necessarily going to be in a hurry to now all of a sudden move him back to tackle.
Just remember one thing. Anytime you have to make a double switch on the offensive line, you're really going to cringe about it, because in
yeah.
a perfect world, you can just plug in a backup and say, okay, you go in and take that guy's, you know, snaps.
Yeah.
That's what you want. The problem
Absolutely.
Is, as I look at this Giants roster right now, I don't see anybody capable of doing that. I think the double switch is probably the only way they can go. And if you're going to go double switch, now you have to think about, okay, if you have to double switch, what are the possible combinations? And what are the good things and what are the bad things about each one of them? That's why I offer to you the one that has Pugh over there and then Fluker at left guard, the one that has Bobby Hart over there and then Fluker at right tackle. Those are the two most logical double switches that I can come up with. But I'm not telling you that I'd necessarily be throwing a pizza party for either one of them.
Yeah, that's a last resort. I'm glad the fans aren't calling the shots. Thank God for that. So, but anyway, that sounds great. I'm hoping they can hold their own, you know, and we can, you know, just be a little bit better than last year, you know, and that might put us over the edge. Just give Eli enough time and get a little bit of a running game going. We're not looking for Perkins to, you know, just, you know, we're all looking for just a little bit of improvement, you know, and then with all our weapons, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thanks, fellas.
You got it, Dan. Appreciate the phone call.
You know, if the Giants can just get their offense back up to the 23 points a game, 24 points a game again, you know, a couple years ago they were up in the 27 range. They don't even have to be that good again. Even if they're in the 23-24 range, I think they're a playoff team.
I think if they could get half of the amount of points back that we
that's
saw
what I'm talking
them dip,
about.
Like you mentioned, I think that's fair. And, you know, as far as the running game is concerned, I think the last caller brought up a good point where, you know, nobody's saying that this team, with the way that it's structured, has to average 150 yards per game. What you want to do is you want to see short yarded situations become much more effective, knowing that when you're in third and ones, third and twos, fourth and ones, fourth and twos, you can convert. And you know that you have the offensive line in the running game to at least continue drives. You don't have to settle for field goals or at least turn the ball over on downs. And then I think on the flip side, you just want to see a little bit more continuity, meaning in game one of the season, if you remember against the Cowboys last year, remember Brett Jones was brought in the fullback. They were very effective mm-hmm. in running that four-minute drill, right, Paul? Then we've seen other games where it disappears. We went back to that Bengals game on Monday Night Football last year, Rashad Jennings. He was able to run out the clock at the end of the game, found the holes, and then you see other games where that was unable to be accomplished. So what I'm saying is a little bit more continuity in terms of what you do well on the ground.
Look, it's unfair to put the defense in the position that they were in last year where they had to hold on so many times in the final couple minutes of a game. You know, Eli would get that go-ahead touchdown, and now the defense is going out on the field. And you know, because the offense then could not milk the clock. They could not effectively run the four-minute offense. And to me, you know, besides the goal line and being able to be more diversified, you know, with that power run game down inside the five-yard line, the most important thing about having a semblance of a running game is with that four-minute offense. It is so unfair, so unrealistic to expect this defense to be able to clamp down as they did last year and won games for this team so many times. Week after week after week, it seemed as though they were being put in very difficult positions, and yet they excelled. Don't get me wrong. They were capable, and I'm sure they're going to be capable this year. But too many things can go wrong. Busted plays, guy slips, official calls a bad penalty. Too many things can happen. If you keep playing with matches, you will burn your fingers. So the four-minute offense has to be effective so that the defense is not constantly walking a tightrope, especially against the schedule they're going to play this year.
And the travel, too. And
it's not fair.
Some of the areas that they're going to, obviously, with those teams improving as well, you know, you have to maintain consistency and keep in line with the competition. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. JW is in Florida. JW, what's happening?
Good afternoon. Oh, good morning, rather. I love your show. This is the first time I've called. Actually, this is the first time I've ever called a talk show. And, Paul, I love Paper Lion. That was a great, great movie.
There you go.
But I'm calling because I wanted to know a little bit about the offensive line coach. Is it Solari? Is that his name?
Yes.
What is his concept? And also, I also believe there is not enough competition in the offensive line to really push these people. There's only one person that's really capable, I think, of playing consistent minutes, and that's Fluger. So I would like your opinion on that, if I could have it, please.
Well, Solari is an old-school coach who believes a little bit more in positive reinforcement as opposed to necessarily, you know, shooting fire at guys when they make a mistake. He's more about, come on, let's coach the guys up. Let's push him up. That's his style of coaching. Some guys are a little bit more rough and rigid, and they're going to try to light a fire in you by getting after you. So Lowry's a little bit more of trying to be encouraging. That I think, is the fairest way. You agree?
No, I think that's very fair. I mean, just observing practice, and I mentioned this a few shows ago when they were breaking up into their offensive linemen against defensive linemen one-on-one drills, after every player went through his rep, Solari would walk up to them, and he wouldn't be in their face and being like, you don't know what the hell you're doing. He would be telling them, okay, this is what you have to do with your feet. This is what was wrong with your hands. And focusing a lot on the details.
Yes.
You know, that's where his big emphasis is. And remember, you know, if you look at his experience, he was in San Francisco, where the Niners had a mix of young guys and veterans. He was in Green Bay, where also you had a mix of young guys and veterans. So I don't think that this is uncharted territory for him, I guess is what I'm getting at, in terms of the mixture of the personnel on the offensive line. In terms of the second part of the question that you asked about, you know, whether or not there's enough competition to push the starters, you know, DJ Fluker certainly comes to mind. Now, Brett Jones has starting experience on this offensive line, though he can't play tackle. He's more of a center and a guard. And the tackles are young. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Chad Wheeler and Adam Biznavati, who are second tier left tackle and right tackle, they're rookies. One is an undrafted rookie. One is a guy that was drafted. So, I mean, there's no doubt about it that there's not a lot of experience. And I think, you know, to ask them to come in and be starters day one may be asking too much. But I still would counter that question by saying, go around the NFL and tell me how many guys that are backup offensive linemen are legitimately pushing to take away a starter's job.
I would only say this to you. Fluker, Jones, and Biznavati, that's probably the best collection of three reserve offensive linemen the Giants have had on their roster in several years. So, you know, if you gauge it that way, this is an improvement. And I get what you're saying. You know, you'd like there to be more, but now at least there's something there. For a number of years, those backup offensive linemen were barely hanging on to the roster.
Well, in past years, I would say that the Giants usually had one guy. I mean, Kevin Booth was a player that you knew.
That's even
you could maybe. So I'm going even further back. But I would say even when the Giants had one of the best offensive lines in the NFL, even when you looked at the backups, I still feel like there was one guy that was sort of Mr. Versatile that you felt that they could plug in. And Kevin Booth was certainly one of the guys that came to mind.
Now, I have another question about the offensive line, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Is our tight end Ellison, is he going to be a factor as far as pass blocking? Is he going to work off either one of the tackles to assist in pass blocking?
I don't think there's any question that Ellison is going to be a factor in blocking. Now, whether or not it's more pass or more run, he's obviously better as a run blocker because as an inline guy, he gets a really good push off the line of scrimmage. He's a tough, physical guy who helps you seal the edge. Now, in terms of pass blocking, I think the Giants are more interested. If they're going to give help, okay, I think what you're going to see is he would be blocking as an H-back. And if he's going to help in pass blocking, I think that's what he would wind up doing more of. Or they'll use Chip into the running backs. But I think when you see Ellison in line, he's going to be more of a run blocker than he would be a pass blocker.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you. And I have one more thing, if you don't mind. I was the reason for this call, one of the reasons that I had, is that I thought that gentleman Len was absolutely idiotic in his statements about filling a roster. I think that's how you make a team better.
Len had a bad
people
day.
That he had a bad day. That, you know, I mean, Booth, for example, he was what, let go by the Raiders and the Giants picked him up?
Yes.
I mean, there's people out there that are big, big assets that just don't fit in a scheme or don't have, the coach's ear in another place that can help this team. And if you can get two or three or even one that can be a starter or can be out there push the rest of the team, I think it's an outstanding way to go.
You know, think about some of the guys, and I mentioned Dave Dorson the other day, and think of some of the other guys, though, that were late scrappy pickups. For instance, Steve Diassi had been cut by the Dallas Cowboys and wound up becoming
absolutely
a big part of what the Giants did on their Super Bowl run. In addition to being a long snapper, he played a lot of linebacker, okay?
Yes, he did.
How about Madison Hedgecock? He wasn't even a Labor Day find. They had gone a couple games into the regular season. The Rams cut him, And all of a sudden, the Giants pick him up off the waiver wire, and he becomes the blocking fullback that helps them win a Super Bowl.
What about the kid, number 57, the linebacker they picked up in midseason that intercepted the pass in the Super
Chase
Bowl?
Chase Blackburn, you're talking about. Yeah,
that's Blackburn. Another
Well, I mean, they brought him back because of injuries, but yeah, and then he wound up picking off Aaron Rodgers, too. Let's not forget about that.
The examples are numerous.
He picked up a fumble in that playoff
But you know
game.
What? Len's a great caller. He's a great fan. He just had a bad day.
Well, it was, you know, it's really.
We all have
you know,
them. We all
know,
have
I listen
them.
Because I enjoy what you have to say. I actually enjoy what the callers have to say. But when you're yelling over each other, it does not make for, you know.
No, we don't like to do that either.
No, well, you know, listen, we're all passionate about what we have to say and appreciate the phone call, J-Dub.
Thank you.
I don't think that this necessarily, you know, removes Len from the dialogue.
No,
it's just that
not
we had
all.
A day where we disagreed and we didn't necessarily agree and see eye to eye on philosophy. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. Everybody's entitled to their opinions. We're just trying to air out the facts here, or at least the different perspectives. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. And, you know, boy, every time we have something generic to say about phone calls, this guy always has to follow, which then brings down everything else that we're trying to bring
oh,
to
come
the forefront.
On. Don't pick on him.
Charlie's in Portland, Maine.
Hello, Charlie. How are you?
Hey, Les. Hey, Paul. Hey, I got to defend Len a little bit. I think what Len was trying to say was that in the last 5 years or since – You know, the last 5 years when we try to pick people up at the end, you remember when we picked up Dahl and we picked up Weatherford?
Craig Dahl.
Not Weatherford, I mean Merriweather, because we had no safeties. How did that work out? They were horrible.
Yeah, but
I think
that...
what Len was trying to say is that maybe 8 out of 10 times you're not going to get a better player than what you probably had on your team.
Well,
because – You know, I think back then we should have kept Roll at that time, but we didn't. We let him go, and we never got anybody to work with Collins, and that was the issue. And I think that's what Len was trying to say. Sometimes we pick up a guy, and he really helps, but most of that has been, Wing was the only thing recent guy that I can think of that really helped this team at the end of preseason, starting of the season when we picked up somebody. And I think that's what he was saying.
Charlie, do you remember Deion Grant?
I do.
And you remember how he was a free agent, and then the Giants had injuries at safety in training camp, and they brought Deion Grant back basically at the last minute and said, okay, we're in the middle of camp, we need somebody, and Deion Grant became a huge part of that Super Bowl championship team.
No,
it happens.
Saying that, sometimes we do hit on it, but I think if you really look out, if you went out of 10, how many times we've hit on a player like that, I think what Glenn was trying to say is most of the time we don't.
Well, I think, Charlie, the point is, most of the time you're not. I agree with that. A lot of times it's not going to happen, especially if your team isn't close to winning. But if your team is close to winning, and you can find somebody who will improve your roster, you have to do it. And that's our point. You should always be looking for an upgrade on your 53.
I agree. I think right now we could upgrade our left tackle position by bringing in
Brandon Albert.
There you go.
I know you want to bring back Jumbo Elliott. I understand that, too.
He wants to bring back Will Beatty. That's what he wants to bring back. I mean, we might as well just say it because he's eventually going to say it. But, Charlie, what I wanted to get back to your point in support of Len. The problem that I have with what you're throwing out is you're looking at the Giants' history. And this is my takeaway. My takeaway from what Len brought up was a generic statement about the league and how the league operates. And you also need to take into consideration what the 31 other teams do, how they try to impact their rosters right on cutdown day, and how it's very common across the NFL landscape where they will make changes to their 53-man roster right as the season starts. So to look at it and just go through the Giants examples I think is misleading. You're not telling the true whole story about how the NFL conducts business. And every team does that. Every team always looks to tweak and improve their roster. So that's why I think it's unfair.
I don't think Glenn was saying that's not what they do. What I think he was saying is the result is not always very good.
Well, and I'm not trying to say that it's a 100% success rate. And I don't think we were trying to sell that. All we're saying is that I don't think a GM is doing its job if they're not looking out on the waiver wire when all those cuts happen to see if they can improve their team. That was the larger point.
You always have to be looking to improve if you can, Charlie. You know that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I have exactly, just
right.
Like we could be doing right now.
Do you have one of your points?
I sent you guys an article, and it was by Jordan Renan. And it was a great article on Flowers, and you, I hope you guys read it, because this is what he said. You know, he said, you know, he was watching the reps, and he said on Monday's practice, you know, Flowers had 5 or 6 awful reps out of 30. Vernon, you know, just basically did what he wanted to do with him, and he said he brought this handful of low light clips to several NFL offensive linemen and some independent line coaches. They all agreed it was brutal. It was, one of them said, it was the worst I've seen, period. And what he was trying to say is, if you have 60 snaps a game, that's going to mean that 6 or 7 times Flowers is going to let somebody just go right past him going after Eli. And that can be a disaster. So he's saying he hasn't seen great improvement on his hand placement or his balance. And this is not just a beat writer saying this. This is offensive line coaches, offensive line men. So I just, you know, they say is that sometimes the cover-up is worse than the crime. Well, in this case, it is. I don't understand why. Even McAdoo, they asked him a question, and they said, like, you know, why, you know, what happened to Flowers? And he was saying, V brought his, well, do you think all the other defensive linemen we're going to face is going to bring their A game?
Charlie,
and he,
let me.
And then he said, well, he did some good things, too. You know, I mean, I don't understand why
they're covering this guy up. All right, let me just stop you right there, because there's
okay.
a very important point here that you and I will both agree on, okay? If this is Eric Flowers' finished product, it's not good enough.
All right,
okay?
I agree.
Can we agree
yep.
on that?
Yeah, I
okay.
agree. Okay,
I'm simply telling you, I don't believe this is his finished product, and I believe there is more to come. Now, we could sit here for the next 5 months and debate that. There's no point in doing that, because time is going to tell the story. But I will agree with you that if this is his finished product, it's not good enough. But I've never said that this is a finished product, and I've never said that this is good enough. What I have said is that he's crawling up, and he's got to get better. I don't see where the argument is.
Well, in the same article, they said that actually Hart is getting better, that they can actually see Hart is actually performing a lot better. So, I mean, they're not just picking on Flower or picking on the Giants. They're saying, no, they see, and I agree, Hart is getting better. But I just don't see it in Flowers. And I don't understand why we're not bringing in Albert. We need a backup plan, and Pugh is not our backup plan. The reason he's a guard is because that's his best position.
Well,
he is not a tackle.
And I agree with that, too,
yeah, no,
Charlie.
Yeah.
I'd much rather keep Justin Pugh at guard, because I've always said since he was drafted that was his best position. Okay? Now, in addition, I will say this. If Albert was really worth it, whether it be either mentally, physically, intangible-wise, don't you think somebody else would have already had him in? Because we know that left tackles are a premium in this league.
Yeah.
Something must be up there, right?
Charlie, in fairness, you know, you are the same person that was campaigning for Jake Long for an entire year, and then it turned out that Jake Long wasn't fully healthy, and then when he signed with the
Charlie, hold on, let's get the facts out here.
Okay, he signed with the Vikings, correct?
And he was so done, it wasn't even funny.
Did you see what happened with the Minnesota Vikings? Why don't you ask Sam Bradford how he's feeling today, okay? So let's be fair, Charlie.
He was the only person left at the time.
Charlie, my point is that you have your feelings, and I'm not saying you're wrong and you're not entitled to your opinion, but your answer is, I'm just going to look at whoever's out on the street, and they have to bring that person in, because in my mind, he's better than anything else here.
Charlie's only requirement is that they have 2 feet.
2 feet, correct, exactly.
They have 2 feet. Charlie wants him playing left tackle.
They got ten fingers.
He's a Pro Bowl player. He's not just like some.
Well, yeah, but Charlie, that's like me saying a guy was a Pro Bowler when he was his second year in the league, and he has since played 7 years, and this is year 9, and I'm expecting him to perform the same way. Come on, I mean, there's a distinct difference, Charlie.
Charlie, we don't want to get on you anymore, because the truth
that's
of the
right.
matter is, you're a good fan, you care about the team, and in a lot of ways, we agree. Just sometimes, I think you go way overboard. That's all.
Well, I'll put my doll away for a day. But
thank
I'll bring
you.
It back out.
All right, Charlie. Appreciate the phone call.
Bye. Thanks.
Yes, that was in reference because every time you say voodoo doll, I think of Charlie with the doll in his hand. I could just vision that.
There. No, he just said he's going to put it in the closet.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So he just now admitted to an entire audience that he is the guy. Let's head back to the phone lines. Don is in Knoxville. Don, what's happening?
Good morning, guys. How are you today?
Hi. Hello, Don. How's everything with you?
Quite well, thank you. A couple of quick comments and then a question. First of all, the other day at Eli Manning's press conference, I had a good laugh because there was Paul Dottino photobombing Eli from the back. And every time the camera swung on Eli, there was Paul. And I thought that was hysterical.
Okay.
I know Paul was recording the conference, but, he was doing his thing. The second thing is that I think, without going into depth, the conversation yesterday with Len, just way out there, because I totally agree with Paul in his salient argument that you're not looking at starters, you're looking at the 53 or 52 or even 51 positions, and you can possibly find a good replacement to upgrade the team. So I'm in total agreement with that. The question I have for you guys is that the Giants seem to be able to move the ball down the field until we get inside the red zones. It, you know, even when Perkins made his on fourth down, got into about the 3-yard line, it seems the chemistry that you would used to have in what I call the machine, the days of O'Hara, Snead, Deal, that line that won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They're not moving off the ball, and the chemistry just does not seem to be there. Is that because of the rookies that are in the line, or do you feel like they still have yet to go to build up on that chemistry?
Well, you know, every offensive lineman will tell you that if one guy is off on his block, it just collapses and everything goes wrong. I mean, that they've got to be in unison at all times. They're telling us, and again, until we really see it, it's going to be hard to justify it or to prove it as a fact. But if you listen to Pugh and you listen to Richburg, they're telling us that they think that these starting five coming back this year will have better chemistry. They will work better in unison. I think the thing about the Giants' offensive lines of the last two Super Bowls that they won that I want people to understand, and I think they'd be the first ones to tell you this, each guy individually was not maybe the best guy at their position in the league, but together, their unit, the sum of the parts, was better than the individual parts. You know, Kareem McKenzie never made a Pro Bowl. Richie Seibert never made a Pro Bowl. You know, but boy, did they get it done, and they were Super Bowl champs. So some of it is the individual players. You know, Flowers has to be better. Hart has to be better. But part of this is also just as a unit, they have to function better. And I really like Richburg and Pugh as leaders on this team. I really like what they've tried to do to build cohesiveness. And I'm willing to let them show me this year that they've gotten it done.
Well, the fact that you break down what the line is doing individually, and I agree with you here, is something that we fans don't necessarily get to do or understand. You know, you're watching the game on TV, and you're seeing that they're getting bottled up. And, you know, for you to say, well, I'm breaking it down the way the coach does, I think if more fans understood that, and you explained it eloquently earlier, I think it would make the game a little bit more exciting. The other thing I bring or want to talk about is the fact that without the starters in what I call the real starters, Eli, Marshall, Beckham, Shepard in there, I think the Giants would have had more points on the board had it gone that way. I'll take the answer off the phone, and I thank you so much for allowing me to speak to you today.
All right, Don.
Sure.
Appreciate the phone call.
And I still think, in spite of the lack of a consistent run game or even a periodic power run game, I still think last year the biggest thing that hurt this offense was Shane Vereen's injury. I still believe that. I think taking him out of the equation was just devastating to this team.
Because when Vereen's in the game, it changes how the defense has to react, knowing that he can run and he can catch the football. Whereas Paul Perkins, even though he had some upside, you know, Paul Perkins was not a proven commodity at that point. A defense is going to treat the offensive line and everybody else differently. So when you remove a key personnel, it does change the dynamics of football. I think that's been well proven. Dre's in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
No problem. I'll close it out. Hey, I'll make it real quick. It's real funny how us so-called Giants fans have revisionist memories. I guess they don't remember that during the season last year, we were begging the coaches and begging you guys to talk to the coaches to get Paul Perkins more touches. But now, all of a sudden, he's not it. I don't understand. You know, what I did was I went ahead and posted an article from 24/7 Sports from Dan Shiner that put in about 10 plays for Paul Perkins on them. They could go ahead and look at it and see the plays and the small sample size of what he did with his opportunities. I guess they don't remember that he, because of the school year, they have they don't have semesters. They have
yeah, he missed the offseason program last year.
Right, he missed half of it. Yeah. Right, so he didn't get the start. He didn't get the touches, and he brought him along slowly because he missed all the camp because he was still in school. But when he got the opportunity, he made the best of it. I use preseason strictly for evaluation purposes. That's not the time to jump off the cliff, because we can go undefeated in the preseason and lose every game in the regular season. This is not the time to jump off the ledge. And I mean, yeah, Flowers, like I said, Flowers was not his best in the first preseason game, but he was better than what I've seen in the past. We got to do our history before we start downing some of these players. Flowers, you can't keep poking him. Let's see what he's doing the season before we kick him out. If he don't perform, then we have the sample size during the actual game and not an evaluation period where you have Eli in the line calling the check downs instead of, you know, and being able to, you know, call the right plays and put them, everybody in the best situation to succeed. I'm waiting on that before I pass judgment. From what I saw from Perkins and what I continue to see, hey, if you don't know what Perkins can do, go on YouTube, go on the Giants website. Everything that he's done for the Giants has been dissected and diagnosed. Watch it before us as fans make blanket statements against players that we really haven't done our history about. Thanks for taking my time. You guys continue to be awesome. Talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. All right, Trey. Appreciate the phone call.
Bottom line, we need to see more of Paul Perkins' history. He's got to build up more of a resume and a repertoire before anybody can really judge what he is. We just don't have enough.
That's what we've been saying time and time again.
We think the upside's there, but we got to see it.
Yeah, like I said, 5 games with double-digit carries is a very small sample size.
And just ask the Redskins if he's any good.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was his first 100-yard game, and then he only had 5 carries in the preseason game. Yeah. Against the Steelers.
And by the way, the Redskins needed that game to make the playoffs. So let's not just down that game as like, oh, whatever, it was the end of the season.
That was a meaningless game.
No,
yeah.
The Redskins needed that game. I mean, they couldn't have played any harder. They needed that game. And he tore them up pretty good.
Yeah. And any running back will tell you, in order to gain rhythm, you need carries. You can't just judge a guy based on 2 or 3 carries. That's why I think a lot of people who are looking at the last preseason game, and let's face it, the numbers weren't good for the entire team. It wasn't just Paul Perkins. Anybody who really got in there and contributed. 23 rushes for 73 yards in that first preseason game. The only one that, you know, showed, I think, some productivity was really Orleans Darkwa, who had 3 carries for 18. Outside of that, you know, nobody really took full advantage of their opportunities.
And again, to Bobby, you know, he was worried about the short yardage and the goal line situation. We've told you this before. Orleans Darkwa has the best skill set to be that short yardage or that goal line back.
Yeah.
Because of how he's built, how strong he is, and how hard he runs in a straight-ahead line. So perhaps he winds up being their guy who leads the team in rushing touchdowns this year. As long as somebody's doing it, that's what the Giants need to find. Who's going to do it? And if they find someone who does, they're going to be better off.
And remember, he wasn't accessible the entire season last year because he wound up on IR and he wasn't fully healthy. So if he could stay healthy, maybe he can carve out that role now that Rashad Jennings is not here anymore.
The people that don't like this are the fantasy people. The fantasy people don't like any of this.
Well, because it drives everybody nuts when you divide the carries.
Because they care about their numbers. They want to know and they want their numbers. You know, they got a totally different perspective. The team just wants to win.
Well, I always say fantasy agendas don't always add up with reality agendas that lead to wins. Sometimes they're on opposite
Tony
ends
Romo,
of
great
the spectrum.
Fantasy quarterback. Never want him in a real game.
All right, with that being said, that's going to wrap up the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Practice is going to be starting up later this hour. We'll have a full report on Giants.com later today, and then members of the team as well as Ben McAdoo will address the media later as well. So that'll be up on the website. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, as we get set for preseason game number 2 against the Cleveland Browns. We appreciate all the phone calls. Those of you who chimed in on Twitter, we'll try to address you off the air. For Paul Dottino,
6 o'clock tonight, MSG. We'll see you there.
Have a good one.